As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The culture is the culture. It's 4-6-A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4-6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined by Ari Wasserman. Ari, there's a lot of shit going on, but I want to start here, and this can be a very brief conversation, but I just want to see where you're at. I'm looking at these playoff rankings. There's no shot, right?
I think there's no shot. Like, I mean, you can like talk yourself into it. I just think the reason why there's no shot is because even if Michigan loses, they probably would still go, right? Over Ohio State if it
over
came
Ohio
to that.
State. Yeah.
So like I think Michigan is Ohio State's roadblock, and like I see a lot of Ohio State tweets in the atmosphere of just like, what if all these four things happen? It's just like, let it go, dude. It's over. Like you know.
Yeah.
And all those things aren't gonna happen anyway, so you know. But they need so in theory you would need Michigan to lose, Cincinnati to lose, and Bama to lose, and then all of a sudden you're like in a one head-to-head battle with Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Or you need Oklahoma State to lose also. Like, you need four teams to lose.
Right.
Like, is a one-loss Cincinnati team going to go and get left out over a two-loss Ohio State? Probably, I would think.
I would think yes.
But I don't think Michigan would.
I think Michigan has cemented itself ahead of Ohio. Because the other thing with this too is like we've had this conversations previous years, like do you punish the team that made the conference championship and had to play the extra game? And I don't know.
I don't think Iowa's going to score a freaking point. So it doesn't.
Yeah, I also think it's a moot point because Michigan's going to win. But
yeah, I mean if Michigan loses to Iowa, that would be like the most disrespectful thing to the rivalry that they could have done. Like, I just feel like after all that, the build to get there, you just like shit your pants. It would almost be like Harbaugh didn't beat Ohio State at all. So like, I hope for their sake that, you know, listen, I know that people who listen to this podcast hate Michigan, and I know that, you know, it's probably something that you're going to remember for a long time, and I get that that would be annoying, but Michigan moving forward and actually doing something now, I think, makes things better. It's like kicking the crap out of Michigan in the past was probably fun, but I feel like it's better when they're good. Like, I feel like it's better when you accomplish something in the meantime. You know what I mean? And I think this year would have been okay because Michigan was, you know, only a one loss team and the Big Ten championship berth was on the line. But I don't know. Like, do Ohio State fans, like, are they rooting for Michigan to lose on Saturday?
Yeah.
I just feel like, yeah, I don't know.
They don't want to see that team go to the playoff and potentially win. I know. No one's going to touch Georgia, I don't think. But
I just feel like
I don't think they want to see Michigan four quarters away from winning a national championship.
I don't know. Maybe I have galaxy brain sometimes. But it's just like, if I were an Ohio State fan, it would irk me to the core of my stomach that the entire playoff field sucks ass, except Georgia. And that, like, Ohio State is, in theory, or probably a better team than everybody who's going, including Michigan. And it's like,
isn't it possible that Ohio State also sucks ass?
Yeah, yeah, I know. I guess Ohio State does suck ass. But, like, I would take talented suck ass over just ceiling suck ass. Like, Michigan and the way that they played their game against Ohio State the other day was them playing at their absolute pinnacle peak. Like, that was, like, the best version of what Michigan could ever be. And Ohio State was just, like, the ass version of itself. And they lost by whatever they lost by. And I'm not saying they didn't get their ass kicked, because they did. But the thing with Ohio State and the thing about Alabama and all these other teams that I always talk about is that when their light turns on, none of these, like Oklahoma State, these teams aren't built the same way. So it is funny to me that, like, Georgia is going to have the easiest path in the history of the playoff to a national championship. Like, if Georgia, unless Alabama wins the SEC championship game and they got to play them again, if Georgia's path is beating Cincinnati and then beating Michigan, like, what are we doing?
What do you mean, what are we doing?
No, I'm just saying, like, that's that path, let's compare it to the other paths of the last champions. Let's compare it to the other fields of who was in the playoffs the last 5 years. The playoff field this year is comprised of the four best, most deserving teams in college football, but it is ass, my dude, when you compare it to any of the last five or six playoff fields in totality. Like,
I would be interested in, actually, I don't want to do that here because it would take too long, but I would be interested in someone doing that research to see if you actually came to that conclusion. I know the names are different and the brands are different. I don't know if the teams are.
All I know
is there were some pretty shitty playoffs the last few years that we're not remembering.
Like, if you think about the 2019 Ohio State team that got knocked out in the semifinal, that team would maybe be the best team in college football this year. Like, that team would win the national championship this year, I bet. It'd be a close game probably with Georgia, but that, like, last year's Alabama team was all time. Like, we can go down the list. The 2019 team that won the national championship, the LSU team, was one of the best teams of all time. Like, who won it all in 18? Alabama? Like, I mean, like, all these teams that won.
Clemson won in 18.
Or Clemson won in 18. And then Alabama won the 19.
With,
like,
a true freshman quarterback.
And Clemson, when they won the championship the last time, was Clemson in its purest form. I'm just saying, like, the idea that the playoff field could be Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, Michigan, and Georgia is a joke.
Oh, I don't think it's a joke. I think it's fun.
I think that it's great. It'll be fun to watch. It's cool that there's new blood. But if Georgia doesn't win the national championship team this year, they should just wrap it up. Like, I don't even know what we're doing.
Curse program.
I think this is the first time in the history of the playoff era where the national championship favorite before or the national championship odds, the favorite before conference championship weekend is minus 400. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. They're good. They're pretty good. I'm excited to
watch
them play.
Georgia's really good, but there aren't a lot of speed bumps on the way. Like, there's no reason why Georgia should lose. Like, Michigan is not going to score a point if they play Georgia.
Yeah.
They won't be able to push Georgia's defensive line, and then Cade McNamara is going to be thrown against five-star safeties everywhere. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Tune in a month when Michigan beats Georgia for the national title. Anyway, I didn't that went a place I didn't think it was going to go, but I think
don't
talk
to wrap about
it up,
the playoff with me and then be surprised when we go down the 10-minute rabbit.
Yeah, I don't really think Ohio State fans give a shit about who's going to win the national championship this year as long as it's not Michigan. I think Ohio State is probably, like, stuck at 7. I think the pieces will move around them, but no matter how
rightfully
it
so
out,
just, too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they don't deserve the game. They lost their two biggest games. Anyway, college football's on fire. I would like to take this moment to announce that I am leaving 4-6 with A&B to go to a different podcast that's going to pay me $100 million over 10 years. So sorry, Ari. I know we had a shot to go to the playoff, but I'm abandoning you for the bag.
You know what's it like? Let's just give them a preview of what we're going to try to talk about on this episode, so we don't lose people. We're going to talk about what we believe Ohio State should do from a staff change or whatever. But they're just. With their staff, where they are as a program, we're going to try to, over the next few
weeks.
All
this movement impacts it, I think. Right?
Yes,
I think there's recruiting impacts in Ohio State. There's, I suppose, staff impacts potentially for Ohio State as all these new coaches are trying to put stuff together and, like, who might become available and who might not. I guess let's start with the recruiting because there was news. We're recording this on Thursday, a little later than we normally do. There was news on
Wednesday.
Which
is great because...
Yeah, it worked out well.
It would have been weird if we recorded yesterday before all the stuff went down. So
yeah. Devin Brown, former USC quarterback commit, who I think maybe some people wondered if there was a potential opening for him to go back there once Lincoln Riley took that job. I didn't really think there was because I just figured Lincoln Riley was going to like bring Caleb Williams to USC or go get somebody else. Devin Brown committed to Ohio State on Wednesday night, number 5 quarterback in the class of 2022. The 15 highest rated quarterbacks in the last 3 recruiting classes, regardless of class, in a 247 composite. 4 of them, 3 are on Ohio State's roster, and a 4th committed on Wednesday night. I know we've talked about it before, but like it's always going to shock me when Ryan Day is like able to pull this off. I don't know how they do it.
I will say one thing. I'll give Ohio State's marketing department an A+. Did you see the graphic that Devin Brown tweeted out?
Graphic was pretty sweet.
Gambling on myself. Like that's got to be the sales pitch, right? Of just like, well, how does Ryan Day continually do this? It doesn't make any sense. You'd think that Devin Brown would just be like, I'm going to go play for Lincoln Riley in L.A. Like, that's the thing, and I don't know how hard that USC pursued him since Riley was hired, but Lincoln Riley's made 3 Heisman finalists, Heisman winners.
Ryan Day's made 2 first-round draft picks. Like,
I'm not saying that he's dumb for going to Ohio State. I'm just saying, like, there was a clear and easy, obvious, and understandable rational path of least resistance just to go to USC right now. So
yeah, but I don't.
And
even
he was already committed
that.
There, and we don't know if
I don't
he had
even
that
know.
Option. Yeah,
I don't even know if he talked with them, to be honest.
Because it happened so quickly.
It didn't seem like it. It seemed like once he decommitted from USC, like he kind of burned the boats, even though he said he didn't. And then it was Ohio State, Ole Miss, and Texas.
Yeah, and Texas seemed to be like leading the way there for a minute, but the sales pitch is gamble on yourself. He embraces that sales pitch. They make a casino, him rolling the dice, and 1 in 5 on the dice. Did you notice that?
I did notice that, yeah. It was really cool. It didn't hit me. I was like, wait, is Devin Brown like from Vegas? Like, what is this? And I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. Also, that to me is the epitome of what you would want out of a quarterback committing, right?
Absolutely.
If you want podcasters like me and you to be confused about why another quarterback would come into this program when it's already log jammed, and he thinks I'm going to gamble on myself, then that's the only explanation that anybody would need. He thinks he's good. He is good. All of these guys are good. Someone's going to win. Someone's going to lose. But somebody who probably believes in themselves enough as a leader and as an athlete to go into a log jam at Ohio State and feel like they're going to win. And here's the other thing. And in the world of the portal, where Jack Miller, I don't even know if we've said it on the podcast, but Jack Miller is now in the portal. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to switch your circumstance, so you have nothing to lose by trying.
Yeah. And I would get, I think I said this before, I totally get wanting to bet on yourself and taking a swing at being the starting quarterback at Ohio State. And if you look at how the room sets up, like, I guess it's possible that come next fall, maybe it's even likely that come next fall, one of Quinn Ewers or Kyle McCord is not there. And even if they both are, it's like C.J. Stroud is the starter for probably next year, and then he's gone. And then it's like you take your chances competing against the other two or one or two guys in the room to be the starter in 2023. So and if you're not, whatever, you just got 4 years left, and you can go find something else if that's what you want to do. Like there's a risk, I guess, removed from this equation now with the transfer portal being the way it is. And frankly, it might even make it easier for Ryan Day to do this, to bring in these guys each year. Not that he wants them to leave. Clearly, he wants them to stay. But I think everyone is sort of realistic about it. It's like, come here, get developed for as long as you want to, compete for the starting job. And if you don't get it, you leave no hard feelings and just kind of go your separate ways.
So you know the whole gamble on yourself mantra?
Yeah.
We're going to start a game show right now called Bill Landis, Gamble on Yourself.
Okay.
If you're wrong on this answer, you no longer live. That's gambling on yourself. Quinn Ewers' years as a starter over under 0.5 at Ohio State.
I was thinking about this last night, actually. Like, is
gamble the, on
is
yourself, Dolla B.
Oh, well, point five. I think I would say over because if he's like the generational dude we all think he is, like I'll say that he will start at some point. But I was also thinking to myself, like, say he is the starter. Is the kid who left high school early to come make NIL money going to be a starter for more than 1 year if he's that good? Like, is he just going to start 1 year and leave? Because even if that, because if you think that might be the case too, and you're someone like Devin Brown, you might be more willing to stick around.
Do you think that CJ Stroud, or if CJ Stroud wins the job next year, that Quinn Ewers will stay?
Yes.
So if you think that, then I would.
Well,
take the
I
over.
Think one of them. I think one of them will stay. At least I don't think you're going to lose both those guys.
What do you mean?
Like it's not.
You're
gonna,
including
I don't
McCord
think
in that discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I'm saying is if C.J. Stroud is named the starting quarterback next year, do you believe that Quinn Ewers will stay?
I do.
Or do you think that he has a thought process that he is going to be a starter next year?
I think he probably has the thought process that he can become the starter at some point next year. It doesn't have to be for the first game against Notre Dame.
So you don't think that we're going into a situation where it's like in the spring, you better decide who it's going to be or I'm out?
I mean, we could be. Like, Quinn Ewers, I think, has zero leverage in trying to do that. So, like, if that's the way he wants to play it, more power to him. I don't think Ryan Day is going to be like, oh, no, wait. Like, we're like, okay, dude, if that's the way you're approaching it, see you later. I think that's how Ryan Day would approach it. But, no, I think – my guess is that – they'll have three scholarship quarterbacks in the fall. Maybe a fourth if they bring in a transfer.
So you're saying that either McCord or Ewers will be gone.
I think one of those guys
one of the three
be bad for the spring. Not Devin Brown, obviously.
No. One of the three of McCord, Ewers, and Stroud will leave after the spring. It's probably not going to be Stroud. Because Ohio State just doesn't operate that way. They don't make changes that quickly. If there's an abrupt change... Like, when's the last time there was an abrupt change at quarterback? Like, somebody's arm had to fall off. Like,
yeah.
If
they're not going to,
they're not going to bench CJ in April.
Yeah, right.
So, right. Yeah, it's just an interesting dynamic. But if your three quarterbacks on the roster next year are Stroud, McCord, and Brown, or Stroud, Ewers, and Brown, that's a really good room that you would be surprised to have intact and they transfer. I mean, that's incredible still. So, like, if there's a natural succession here, if we could just be, like, actually trying to predict the future right now, Stroud starts for one more year next year, goes to the NFL. Mm-hmm. Ewers then plays 1 year, goes to the NFL, then Devin Brown in year three of his career would be the starter. And that would be a natural succession, to borrow the HBO title. Like, let's put them all out on a jetway and see if we can take a picture of these guys by an airplane. But, like, it's just
right.
That would make sense to me. And, like, to me,
I think.
If you believe in Ryan Day and the reason why you want to gamble on yourself is to be coached by Ryan Day, then if I were a recruit, I would be like, I don't give a crap if it takes till year three. I want to be the starting quarterback at Ohio State. And if I'm a year older when it happens, I'm a year older when it happens. And then I'm going to go get the bag. Like, I don't understand the idea of I'm going to go to Ohio State for a year or two, and then I'm going to go be the starter at Iowa State. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, if you're going to come to Ohio State, then you should be okay waiting 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and I guess, like, that, to use the, like, and I know Jack Miller just went into the portal, right? But he stayed here for 2 years. So it's not like, he stayed here for 2 years when he had, like, no one ever thought he was going to play. Like, he had... as soon as Kyle McCord showed up, like, Jack Miller got jumped on the depth chart, and Jack Miller still stuck it out for another year. So I don't think it's that crazy to think that, you know, Kyle McCord or Quinn Ewers would be willing to do the same, especially if they think they're getting developed in a good enough way. That
the thing that's a little bit different with Quinn Ewers, and this might not be a fault of his own, but the way that he is described, the way that his recruiting ranking implies that he is, and the way that he's being paid from NIL deals right now, I think changes a person's brain chemistry. Like, I don't think that Quinn Ewers and Jack Miller have the same brain chemistry.
They're also, and, you know, we're talking, no offense to Jack Miller, we're talking about different calibers of quarterback, too.
Yeah.
With both McCord and
I'm very curious to see what happens to Jack. Like, I wonder if he's going to be the starter at ASU next year. Or, like, if he's not a starter at all. Like, I'm very curious to see exactly how good he is, because I think that would give us some context about how good Ohio State's quarterbacks actually are. It's like when Tate Martell left, I had no idea whether or not to get you, you know, all hot and bothered right now talking about Tate Martell, but, like, I had no idea what to expect. Like, was he going to go to Miami and be, like, a fun quarterback that was awesome, or is he going to go to UNLV and play receiver? Like, I had no idea which one it was going
to
be.
In my heart, he was going to go to Miami and be a fun quarterback who was awesome, but alas, that has not happened, and I think the ship has sailed on that one.
I think it would have just been so fitting for the type of person that he was.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm curious to see what happens to Jack Miller as well. I figured, like, Arizona State, right? But then, like, Spencer Rattler also went in the portal. So does he jump the line of Arizona quarterbacks looking to return home? Probably.
Does Spencer Rattler suck? Is that the thing now? Or, like, did he just have a rough few games? Like, I just don't know. Or, like, is Caleb Williams just super special?
I think Caleb Williams is super special, and Spencer Rattler throws the football like an insane person. Just, like, throws the football like defense doesn't exist, which is not a great trait for a quarterback.
I wonder if the Caleb Williams scenario is like what Ohio State's looking down the barrel of.
Yeah, it's the Caleb Williams scenario. It's the Trevor Lawrence scenario. Mm-hmm. It's 100% on the table. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that CJ Stroud is better than Kelly Bryant, and based off of recent performances, I would say that he's better than Spencer Rattler, even though they're different players. So, that also changes the calculus on Ohio State's end too. But I think it's on the I don't think anything's ever going to be billed as like an open competition for the quarterback job. It's CJ Stroud's job.
It's going to happen abruptly.
And rightfully, I think it should be his job. He's played well enough this year for sure that like he is the starting quarterback, but who knows what's going to happen next year. I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's on the table, even if I think it's less likely to happen here than it was at those.
Have you watched Evan Brown's film?
I have.
What is your take on the way that he plays? And
really good fit.
Your X's and O's.
I think a really good fit for what they want to do, and that is like the like play action, throwing off of movement, push the ball down the field kind of stuff. Excuse me, I have the hiccups. I actually. It's kind of funny. People probably know this, as I think Byrne might have tweeted about it on Wednesday when Devin committed. Devin is from Arizona and played his first 3 years of high school ball in Arizona and just transferred to Utah for his senior season. When he was in Arizona, his high school coach was Joe Germain. And I talked with Joe Germain on Wednesday night about Devin for a story. I'm hoping they're right later this week. I got to talk to another person or two. But that's the thing that Joe Germain said too, is that his ability to throw the ball down the field is like the special trait that Ryan Day says you always look for in a quarterback. For Devin Brown, that's vertical passing game. Probably could do, if you read some of the stuff from people who were like at Elite 11 and saw him in a different setting, I think they talk about improving kind of like layering throws and throwing the ball in the middle of the field and that kind of stuff, and knowing when to change your speeds a little bit. But like straight fastball, throwing it down the field, really special and can move. I think he's a pretty good athlete. Seems like he's a pretty confident, kind of tough dude. So I think he checks a lot of boxes for them. And his high school film is fun as hell to watch because it looks like he played in like a wide open throw it 45 times a game type of offense in Utah. But when he was in Arizona, he played in kind of like a more pro style type of system that Joe Germain tried to, you know, base off of the offense that the Rams had when Joe was drafted there. So he's got experience in some different offenses too, which I think is good.
Yeah, Ohio State's class jumped up to number four nationally. I think that is probably the ceiling of where they'll end up this year.
Yeah, and let's get into some of that. So, and you've been doing a lot with the Lincoln Riley move to USC and like the recruiting fallout of that. How do you feel about Zion Branch?
Before we go into that, the Branch brothers seem to be all USC right now, from what I can tell. But you know when Urban Meyer was the rumored candidate for the last 2 years for USC? Mm-hmm. The way that it actually turned out for SC, is there anybody that they could have hired within reason that could have matched the juice that Urban would have brought remotely as close as Riley came to duplicating that? Like, to USC...
I think West Coast is closed off now almost, right? It kind of feels that way.
Like, did USC hit the biggest grand slam imaginable? Like, could, outside of hiring Nick Saban, which was never going to happen, could they have hired a more perfect fit to make them cool again?
No, I don't think so.
So it'll be very interesting to see how Ohio State's foot... Like, they're not going to get everybody in Southern California. But I think that recruiting California just got a hell of a lot harder.
Yeah.
Especially offensive players.
I think you're right about that. And, you know, it's not... Ohio State has been really good the last decade, I would say, or almost decade, of finding those pockets, those weak spots to attack and exploit and get really good players. So I don't have much doubt that if California becomes tougher that they won't find somebody else to go to or someplace else to go to. I think they will. But it's not insignificant that it's going to be more challenging to recruit there, especially the offensive players, like you said, quarterbacks in particular.
It's like almost like one last parting gift with Brown. Just like, okay, yeah, you're going to get Devin Brown, and I know that he's not from California, but a USC commit, you can take
West
him.
West Coast guy.
And then now, because like the thing that I think about USC too is that, and I don't know where their class is going to finish up because I think they only have like five commitments right now, and they're like in the 70s in their 2022 class. I think 2023 will be the class that we really start to see them jump. But I think that they are automatically going to have top five classes every single year moving forward. And it's not just going to be because they are recruiting California well. I think USC is going to become a national brand again and one of the cool brands at the opening that everybody's talking about. And kids in Georgia and Illinois and Pennsylvania and all these other places who have offers, the five-star prospects from USC are going to visit them. And like it's going to be like the same way that Oklahoma was last year. And Oklahoma, I think, was recruiting a rung below the elite programs if you go look at the classes that they – but not when it came to offensive skill. And, you know, I was talking to Antonio Morales, our USC writer, and he said that USC's biggest problem will be recruiting linemen on both sides. And I'm curious to see how they address that. But I think USC will not only take the next jump in the context of the sport because they've done better in California, I think they will become a national recruiting outfit now.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think for Ohio State's purposes, obviously, that impacts a lot of things, but I think it makes it harder to go to Southern California. Bishop Gorman, probably, where the Branch brothers are, as you mentioned. I think you're not the only one who's been saying that there seems to be a lot of momentum for those guys to stay out west now, which I'm sure sucks for Ohio State because they seem to really take advantage of the uncertainty at USC and put themselves in a good position for Zion Branch and
I mean, how many players has Ohio State taken out of the West Coast the last 2 years? Like 10?
Quite a bit, yeah. And the other thing that's interesting for me is like because there's a Zion Branch is the big one, but also Ernest Green, offensive lineman at St. John Bosco out there in California too. Like Ohio State had made really good inroads, I think, at Bosco.
I talked to their recruiting coordinator on the phone on Sunday.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, like, I don't think that door at Bosco closes to Ohio State now. Like, I think it's the kind of place that, like, once you're in, you're there and you have those relationships and you work them to your benefit. But Lincoln Riley and USC are going to defend Bosco and they're going to defend modern day. And
It's just the same thing that we always talk about recruiting. It's just, it's time. Nobody's pretending like Ohio State won't be able to get guys. Like, Ohio State is still Ohio State. But it's going to be a matter, it's going to be a matter of whether or not they view it as a good use of their time.
I don't know how much in play USC was for Ernest Green before all this. Have you heard anything in regards to him and the USC staff?
I talked to the recruiting coordinator at Bosco on Sunday when I was writing the profile about Riley to USC, and I just asked him about Ernest, and he said Ernest was like getting ready to make a decision pretty soon, and that like now USC is making him question whether or not he needs to do more due diligence before making that decision. But my understanding was that Georgia was the team to beat here. So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know Ohio State was in on him, and you know all the teams that I think are in play are what, Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Texas, and SC. Mm-hmm. It'll be very interesting to see how long he pushes back his decision now. And like, look, we're December 2nd, and you know that's 13 days or 12 days away from when these kids can sign. So it'll be interesting to see if like some of these Southern California prospects don't sign during the early signing period.
Yeah, right.
Because like, if he doesn't sign in 2 weeks with one of these teams, then I feel like USC is the team to beat. Like there's an indication there that USC would be the team.
Right. The last one, and I think this is a little bit different of a situation, but it's still a quote-unquote Southern California kid. Hero Canoe, the defensive tackle in the 2022 class, who's originally from Germany but plays at Rancho Santa Margarita, which is like 50 miles, I think, from USC's campus outside of L.A. He was not really considering USC, but was considering Oklahoma and had good relationships there, has really good relationships with Ohio State too. And I think there was a lot of reasons to feel really good about where Ohio State was in that recruitment. And they're probably still.
And buddy, after that Michigan game, this might be their number one most important target in the class right now.
Hero Canoe and Caden Curry.
Yeah.
Like 1A, 1B, whatever word you want to put them in. I'm wondering now if Lincoln Riley in his USC polo can get in Hero Canoe's ear and try to keep him West Coast based, which would, it's not really keeping him close to home because he's not from there. Like I said, he's not really a California kid, but it is nearby.
Bill, once you live in California for 10 minutes, you're a California kid.
Well, I think with him, it's like, it's, yeah. Like if his mom lived in California, I think that would be like,
no, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Deal, but she doesn't. But he has one official visit left. So, and I think his plan had been to sign and then announce at one of the All-Star games. And as far as I know, that's still the plan. But again, I wonder if USC might be able to put that off and make that another battle for Ohio State as it tries to finish off this class.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Now, the thing that I will find interesting here, and I mentioned this before, but if you look at the commitments or the types of players that USC is... They've got four commitments right now. Like, their class is empty. And one
That's
of them's
insane.
A, one
four?
Of them's a punter. Well, three or four guys decommitted, air quotes, the last few days. And one's a punter, too, from Australia, which I'm sure you could get behind.
Oh, national title incoming.
But all the players, like, less than the 20, especially in the 2023 class. Now, Relique Brown, the five-star running back who was committed to Oklahoma, decommitted from Oklahoma on Wednesday and is announcing his decision on Thursday. I think the idea is that it's going to be USC. So, you know, Makai Lemon, who was an athlete, wide receiver, like these guys, the wide receivers in the classes are all trending towards SC because why wouldn't you, right? Like, why wouldn't you go play for Lincoln Riley in the Coliseum? I'm very curious to see if USC can get linemen. Like, are they going to be able to get Canoe? Are they going to be able to get Green? Because those guys want to go play big-time football out. You know, Lincoln Riley is a legitimizing force, but if you're a defensive lineman, do you want to go play at Georgia or do you want to go play at SC right now? You know what I mean? And that's...
Yeah.
That's... Or do you want to go play for Larry Johnson? So, very... Absolutely something to track, but I'm curious to see what is going to happen with those guys.
I don't know. I think defensive lineman, you're right on. Offensive lineman, I thought I saw that he was bringing Bill Biedenball with him, his offensive line coach, but then, like, he wasn't there with him when he went to LA, so I'm assuming that's still happening. Like, he's one of the probably top five offensive line coaches in the country, and for as much reputation as Lincoln Riley has as like a quarterback guru, and they get a bunch of quarterbacks and receivers, like, they play a pretty physical brand of football, which is why I thought that Ryan Day should try to hire Bill Beatonball if he could. But I don't know if that's going to be on the table now, if he's just going to go to USC with him.
I reacted. I didn't say anything, but I reacted.
If he goes, well, we're going to get into some of the staff stuff. I think we should probably start with Larry Johnson, because you mentioned him there. Clearly influential in the recruitment of Hero Canoe. Like, I didn't go to every summer camp last year. I went to like four of the six or seven, whatever there were. But I was there the day that Hero Canoe was there. And I'm not sure I've ever like witnessed a player and coach like hit it off immediately in the way that Larry Johnson and Hero Canoe did. And it was like that day I was like, okay, Hero Canoe is going to Ohio State. And then he like hung around the next day, and Ohio State's been in a really good spot ever since then. And I actually believe.
Are you saying it was love at first sight?
It truly was. And I think as long as Larry Johnson is Ohio State's defensive line coach next year, I still think they're going to get Hero Canoe. But there's some question about that. Like, I know Austin Ward at Letterman Row, who always has really good sources on this stuff and whose reporting I trust, said that there's more smoke around the Larry Johnson retirement rumors than there has been in the past. It's something that's come up every year for like the last 5-6 years, maybe even longer than that. But Larry's always kind of stuck around. I will say, like, I tried to check in on some of that, and I was told that, like, nothing was decided on that. And from what I was told, like, I would think that Larry is going to be back next year. So that would be to Ohio State's benefit as they try to finish out what could be a really strong defensive line class if they can get Caden Curry and Hero Canoe and perhaps Omari Abor to add to Kenyatta Jackson. That's like a really good defensive line class. That's probably the second best on paper behind last year's group that they will have signed, at least since I've been covering the team. So I don't have any reason to believe right now that Larry Johnson's leaving. Or retiring, excuse me, but I suppose it's on the table. But I think based off what I was told the other night, I would be surprised if that happened. But the other thing with this is, too, I think Ohio State is trying to keep a lot of staff stuff under wraps and just kind of get to the early signing day, and then maybe we'll hear some more stuff after that happens. So as it pertains to that, like, where...
Can I ask a question that has nothing to do... it has something to do with... So let's just say Larry Johnson, the perfect assistant is a 10 on a scale from 1 to 10, and a 1 is an assistant.
Bill Davis.
I was going to say another one. That would have been worse, but yes. right now, how do you feel about Larry?
Still pretty good. Like an 8, maybe?
Where were you a year ago?
10.
Okay. So I'm not insane?
No, I think he would tell you, like, his group didn't play well last year. This year. I guess we're still in this year. Defensive line, his last year. We're on the Tennessee.
Yeah. We're talking about recruiting now in the middle of December. So, yeah.
He had his position group had a bad year last year. But he also signed like a killer class in 2021. Like, you got JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer and Mike Hall. Like,
yes,
thought doesn't get much better than that. And if he can close the deal with the group that he's after this year, like, killer class in 2022.
I think he's still
got the juice. I just think this wasn't one of his better coaching jobs. But
yeah, this
I
isn't
also
an implication that he should be fired.
I think the fact that this past year wasn't his best year on the field increases the likelihood that he might want to come back and make that right before he ultimately decides to retire.
I think that it's interesting that Ohio State's defense has been really, really good for the last 12, 10 years, whatever, for the exception of the 18 season and this season.
And last year.
But for the most part, Ohio State has had a first-round pick at defensive end.
Yep.
Two Bosas and Chase Young. And when you have that guy on your team, when you have your Aiden Hutchinson or whatever you want to state it, your defense is just a different unit. I don't care what your scheme is or how good the other... Like, if you have somebody that's going to wreck an opposing offense, your defense is just better. And I find it to be very disappointing that... And I don't know maybe how much you can put this on a defensive line coach's plate.
that Zach Harrison never turned out to be that, or that Tyreek Smith never turned out to be that. And I know that that's the highest possible standard, and maybe Tyreek Smith shouldn't be held to that because he wasn't rated that way.
He was borderline five-star.
They haven't had a very good pass rush, and their defensive line got blown off the ball by Michigan for four quarters. So I don't know if that's a strength coach issue. I don't know if that's a heart issue in terms of wanting it less than the opponent or whatever other halftime speech you would see in Rudy. I don't know if that is a skill set or a coaching. I don't know what that is. But Zach Harrison is on Bruce Feldman's freak list. You said that he ran a 4-second 40 with clown shoes on in the rain. Like,
in the rain.
That's what right. is going on?
I think sometimes the evaluations can be off from the jump, right? And we get these lofty expectations for guys who just aren't built the same way as the guy, like as a Bosa, as a Young. I think that happens. I think that's partly what
built
happened.
Built the same
with,
way,
with
like
Zach.
Emotionally or physically.
Built the
like,
same
you could
way.
Say, like, with Harrison, like he was certainly
the
built
total
physically
package.
The
like,
same
but
way.
But like Zach Harrison, who by the way I think is like been a pretty good college player. I agree with you 100% that he never quite became what we all thought he was going to be.
And I think it was pretty apparent from the beginning that it wasn't coming.
Right, but he would be far from the first player to be a freak athlete who never became a freak football player. You know what I mean? Like that happens sometimes.
It's be an interesting thing, but like usually when Ohio State's had a five-star defensive lineman, that five-star defensive lineman turns out to be really, really, really impactful. I bet you if you went back to the beginning of Larry Johnson's first year at Ohio State and you added up his hit rate, I bet you would be higher than other coaches.
I think that's right.
And it probably is to a certain extent because playing defensive line is just being about a physical brute, you know. But it's certainly a lot about athleticism too. And it's just like you would think that his size, strength, and athleticism would have just been a no-doubt-about-it scenario. So, and I think that if you added Chase Young to this year's team, then this year's team is still potentially undefeated and maybe going to the playoff right now. Like I think
fix a lot of problems. Yeah.
Yep. So,
I think you're right, and I think it's a fair criticism of the development of that position over the last couple of years. On the other side of that coin, I would be very excited about Jackson.
It's like what happened to Haskell Garrett? Well.
Dude
was like the best defensive lineman, interior defensive lineman in the Big Ten last year.
I think sometimes, and we've seen it happen here because it happened for it didn't really happen for an entire season because those guys couldn't go. I think sometimes when you should go pro and you don't go pro and you come back, there's a little something missing there. I don't know what that is either. Like I think Haskell Garrett's a good player who didn't have a great season, didn't have a bad season. Like he was first team All Big Ten, but and also too. Didn't have Tommy Togiai next to him.
Yeah.
Which was not something that was talked about a whole lot.
They did have Teron Vincent next to him, and that didn't work out
either. Yeah, Teron Vincent ain't a nose tackle. And I was – something I wondered about coming into the year, how that would work out, because they didn't really have that guy, like a Togiai, like a Devon Hamilton. Even a B.B. Landers is a different kind of guy, but still a presence at that position. They didn't have it, and I think that hurt them. It didn't hurt them as much. Maybe it did hurt them as much as not having an elite pass rusher, but it hurt them not having a guy like that. And I think that's why you want to see him. Well, even like I don't even know, like Caden Curry and is probably not that. Hero Kanu, I guess, could be because he's a pretty strong dude, even if he's not like a 330.
His name is Hero Kanu. He better be.
Yeah. Tyleek Williams might be that, and probably arguably should have played more toward the latter part of the year. There's a lot of leaving something to be desired, I think, along the entire defensive line. So if you're Ryan Day and you assess that and you say, like, you know what? Nothing about this defense is good enough. I'm tearing it down to the studs, and that includes getting rid of a guy who has earned, I think, the title of being like a legendary defensive line coach. I think that's warranted. I'm just not sure that's going to happen. I'm having a hard time trying to figure out exactly how drastic I think these changes are going to be, which is what I wanted to ask you there. Like, what is your anticipation in terms of how much staff shakeup we see, or what do you anticipate from Ryan Day, who has some hard assessments to do after losing to Michigan and not making the playoff.
I anticipate there's going to be quite a bit of shakeup. I watched the news conference after the Michigan game. That was like the saddest he's ever looked to me.
Yes.
And I think that sadness is a precursor to change.
Yeah, and in the time in between then, like, Josh Gattis is out here calling your team soft.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like...
And the head coach of Michigan said you were born on third base.
Yeah, right.
Also, we were making fun of Josh Gattis for not knowing how to call an offense a year ago, and now he's a Broyles finalist.
Michigan largely just kicked Ohio State's ass up and down the field running the ball, but when Josh Gattis had to dip into his bag to pull out a little something different, he did it and it worked. So kudos to him. He called a really good game. Had a good plan, called a good game. Yeah. And when you win, you get to talk shit. And,
yeah, no, you know, yeah, all the power to him. He should keep doing it. That's what makes it fun.
Him saying that Ohio State's not a tough team, I don't think there are many Ohio State fans who disagree with him, to be perfectly honest. I think it's actually a fair criticism. You don't want to hear it from your rival after they beat you, but I think it's probably largely true, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think...
I just don't know, like, what do you mean? Like the thing, too, is, and it's hard to quantify when it comes to coaching, but, like, when you think of coaching, you think of putting the right players on the field, developing those players into good players, and putting them into a scheme that they can excel in. It's just like, if you think that Ohio State is soft, then that's directly pointed to their strength coach, right?
That's where I would start.
You start at the strength coach, then you start to the head coach, and then trickle all the way down to game day to get them to play with an attitude. But it's just like, how do you fix softness? Do you fix it by replacing assistants, or do you fix it by changing your mentality? I mean, do they need to hire to hang some bullshit banner up on the Woody Hayes Center that has some weird slogan like Urban used to do to, like, what's this one going to be, the hardening?
Yeah, I don't like slogans and banners. I don't, unless you want to, you know, by all means, go ahead and put 42-27 up there in the weight room.
Wait, you think that's going to be a thing when you go into spring football? The first day of spring football? Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. After, like, everyone's going to take pictures of it? Yeah.
It was a thing after they lost
the door code. Yeah, if you want to break into the Woody Hayes Center, the door code's 42-27.
The door code is 42-27. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Stop over there. Go ahead and get yourself a pizza from the cafeteria.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we'll see some of that shit, but it is a mindset thing, and it is like it does make me wonder a little bit about Ryan. Like, I think Ryan Day is just a different personality than what was running that program for the 7 years prior to him. And say whatever you want about Urban Meyer, that dude knew how to make people play with an edge. And I don't know. Ohio State's had it in some games under Ryan Day. I think it's easier to have one when you are immensely talented compared to the rest of your competition, as they were for much of 2019. I would say the last 2 years, they lacked that in a significant way. And I think that starts with the head coach and the strength coach. And it's not to say they can't get them there, but they have to get them there. I think that is like...
Well, now Ohio State can come into next year and be like, yeah, we're no one respects us, we're the underdog, blah, 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 all that crap, I guess. But like...
Well, they're not the underdog, but I do think... Ohio State's never an underdog.
Yeah.
They might say that.
They're going to say it, is what I'm saying.
It's never true. But I do think that they lost a little bit of clout with this. Disrespect, whatever you want to call it. Like, people saw an Ohio State team get its ass kicked by Michigan, get pushed around by an Oregon team that is probably, like, above average to good at best. I think you they saw Ohio State bleed, and that's not happened a whole lot in the last decade, especially on that kind of stage and that kind of game. So I think there is a little something lost there that Ohio State has to try to get back, for sure. I don't label it whatever you wanted. I think they did lose something that they have to try to get back. In addition to figuring out how they want to play defense and who are the right people to be calling that thing, and offense too. Like, I think he needs a new defensive coordinator. I know we were asked a couple episodes ago. I think it was on a mailbag show that was for subscribers. So maybe not everyone listening to this heard that. But we were asked, is Matt Barnes going to be the defensive coordinator last year? And both of our answers were, ask us after the game. Here's our answer after the game. No. And it's not like, I think Matt Barnes is a really good coach. And I think it would be to Ohio State's benefit to keep him around. Again, cleaning houses on the table and fair. They need a veteran defensive coordinator who runs his own shit, who Ryan Day can leave the hell alone and stay out of the defensive room because he's not a defensive coach, and like let that guy be the head coach on the defensive side of the ball. Whether that's like an up-and-coming NFL guy who you think has the goods and you want to give him a shot to call his own defense, or it's a veteran, established college defensive coordinator.
Get Alex Grinch back into the building.
Not Alex Grinch. As someone who wrote after Alex Grinch left for Oklahoma that Alex Grinch leaving was a loss for Ryan Day, and quite possibly the worst take I've ever had.
He's at USC now, right?
He is at USC now. He had one good defense at Oklahoma. His other two defenses stunk. I think he's not very good. I would not want him as my defensive coordinator. I don't want Chris Ash as my defensive coordinator. Stop huffing Urban's farts. Go find somebody else who can who has not been in the building before and has new ideas and good ideas. We don't have to just recycle Urban's old staff. You're allowed to hire new people. I want them to hire a smart, innovative, competent outside person. That's the resume I would like for whoever.
But you don't like huffing defensive coordinator is. huffing Urban's farts.
Yeah, stop huffing Urban Meyer's farts,
dude. You want to get somebody like Halfley,
Yeah, Halfley be good.
Yeah, charismatic, young NFL mind who knows how to run a defense and has no ties to the program.
Yeah, I think. I would be curious, the fan base's reaction. I don't think a Halfley type would be automatically a bad decision, but when you say that, you're talking about a person who has no prior coordinator experience, and I think maybe most of this fan base and maybe most of the people listening would rather have somebody.
Who do they want? Bill Cowher? I mean, there's a certain extent of and I get
Will Muschamp. It's just a name that I'm saying. It's not based off anything, but I think a guy like that. Shit, I don't know. I'd look at the teams that had good defenses. Oklahoma State's defense is nasty. Go hire Jim Knowles. Houston's defense is nasty. Go hire Doug Belk. I don't know. It doesn't have to be Mark D'Antonio.
Yeah.
frankly, probably shouldn't be Mark D'Antonio for a lot of reasons. But someone like
Landis
that.
Got a little pep in his step today. I'm not hating it.
Well,
you fired up today, buddy?
I'm curious more than anything to see what Ryan Day does. I don't think he can stand pat, and I don't think he will stand pat. But if his version of aggressively attacking things is just walking down the hallway and knocking on someone's door who's already been there and says hey man, you want to be a position coach? That's not good enough for where Ohio State is right now. They got to go out and get somebody who has either a track record of doing this at a high level, or
has illustrated the traits in a lower position that would make you feel like this is a star in the making. We're going to give him the keys to the car. But whoever you give the keys to the car to has to have the keys to the car. There's no come have the keys to the car, but let me only drive it on the weekends. Whoever you hire, you have to go all in on and let them do their thing. Because, you get it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where they're at on defense. I don't have, at least on my end, it's been kind of quiet, so I don't really have anything concrete to tell anybody about that. But, and I think there's probably some change coming on offense too. Kevin Wilson was mentioned for the Akron job. Now it sounds like that's going to go to Joe Moorhead. Would not be surprised if Kevin Wilson's name comes up again, because that guy really wants to be a head coach. Tony Alford, I don't think would go anywhere unless Colorado State opened, and Colorado State should open. Because Colorado State found itself huffing Urban's farts. That got them Steve Addazio. And you never want to be left holding Steve Addazio. So I think it changed.
I think that it makes
sense
that Urban Meyer can make things happen under Urban Meyer. But if you try to be Urban Meyer without being Urban Meyer, then it's going to be a bad thing, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I do wonder, and what are we? What minute are we in?
50.
Okay. So I'm not going to say what I was going to say, because that would put us over the time limit.
New episode.
Let me say this for the next episode, and then you can write this down with your Mark Cuban gif.
In my pen.
I think we might be on the verge of reappreciating how good of a coach Urban was.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think we could be two years away from being oh my God, why did I celebrate when this man left?
Possibly. I don't know if anyone thought that Urban was a bad coach.
No. I think reappreciating how transcendent he was and not appreciating how hard it would be to replace him. Because it went from, they just hired Ryan Day to, everything's fine, and everything was fine. But it also
was... Replacing guys like that is difficult.
Yeah.
Ask Larry Coker.
And the, you know, yeah, goes. I don't...
I don't know that Ryan Day is Larry Coker. I mean, Larry Coker crashed and burned really bad. And Ryan Day made the playoff 2 years in a row after. And, like, listen, the man just lost his first Big Ten game a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that Urban was, you know how I feel about him. I think he's an incredible college football coach. Yeah. And I think that it is apparent to me that there are certain things that he did at running this program that is just hard to duplicate.
Yep, and I also think there's cautionary tales there with Urban too. Like the things that were his undoing at Ohio State was uninspired coaching hires. And at the moment, it feels like uninspired coaching hires are becoming a little bit of Ryan Day's undoing. Not that he can't get it fixed. He certainly can't.
Which is crazy because his first hire ever was amazing.
Who was that?
Halfley was his first, wasn't it?
Oh, right. No, I think, and that's the thing. It's like Ryan Day, so this is Ryan Day's third offseason, right? Or I guess fourth. I don't know. His first, I thought he did a really good job. Maybe aside, like his, no, I thought, yeah, his first offseason, we brought in Al Washington, who I don't, is.
Can be, Jeff.
Not done a particularly good job here. Can be Jip. Yeah, he's just, it's not, linebacker play should be better, man. And linebacker recruiting outside of kids who aren't from Ohio should probably be better too. But that, in general, he did a good job, I thought, with that staff. Greg Madison, Jeff Halfley, Mike Yersich, whatever, I could take or leave. But Madison and Halfley in particular. Second time around, not that good of a job. He has another chance to do it. So
over or under, how many new assistants there will be on the team next year?
So they have 10. I'm trying to just do math in my head real quick.
Well, yeah, so knowing how many total they had is a big hurdle for
you. No, I'm trying to count up who I think like will definitely be back. Honestly, I feel like people who I think will definitely who I feel like good about definitely being back, I think I'm like 3.
Yeah. Who are they? And then we'll go.
It's like 2.5. I think like Hartline for sure. Corey Dennis, Tony Alford, unless Colorado State opens up and he gets that job, which I think is realistic if it does open up. But if it doesn't, then I think he stays.
So I read the report that Kelly tried to get Alford to go to LSU.
By the way, yeah, you want to know if tell me you're an asshole without telling me.
Yeah,
no,
I know.
Asshole.
I was like, just gonna say, literally nobody,
no one's going with that guy.
Notre I would say Dame those columns, three. Like I read Pete Sampson's column today, and I'm like, holy shit, dude, Notre Dame just leveled up.
Yeah.
Is that like how everybody feels right now? Like they.
Have we said Marcus Freeman's name on this podcast?
We should talk about it for a minute.
Well, he's not going to be Ohio State's defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Because he's not Notre Dame's head coach. But just real quick, the question you asked me, I think it's Hartline, Dennis, Alford, I feel really good about. And I would put like a half between Kerry Combs and Matt Barnes. If you maybe make a decision, I would say probably both those guys could be back in different capacities. So that's 5, and then you could be looking at 5 new ones. So I would set the over-under at like 3.5, 4, and I might take the over on either of those.
Yeah, you think it'll be like ex-coach takes job at Iowa State? Like, you think that's how it's going to happen, or do you think it's going to be like the prison scene in Breaking Bad season 5.
I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, yeah, usually when Urban quote unquote fired somebody,
they always got
like,
another job.
Yeah. Ed Warner decided he wanted to go to Minnesota. He wasn't fired. Like, okay, whatever, right, whatever you say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if everyone on offense, except for Greg Sudrawa came back, I think that's probably in the cards too. My opinion, I don't know what they're going to do. I think they need a new offensive line coach. I think they need a new offensive line coach. They need a new linebackers coach. And they need a defensive coordinator who can be left the hell alone to do his own thing. I think those are the 3 big things that Ohio State needs.
I'm with you, bud.
Yeah.
I was out on... So listen, at Ohio State, we have this tendency, and I don't know if it's we, but people. People go from best to worst very quickly. And they go from worst to best very quickly. I don't know if you were around during this time, but there was a time where Luke Fickell being fired as Ohio State's defensive coach was trending on Twitter.
Yep.
So, like, I know there are good seasons. I know that there are bad seasons. And I know that the way things play out isn't always an indication of who you are as a coach or person.
Like, Mickey Marotti was the best strength coach in America 2 years ago, and now Ohio State is soft. So, like, which one is it? You know? I didn't want to, like, get caught up on this, but I have not been impressed by Al Washington for 2 years now. And, like, yeah. Al Washington 2 years ago was, like, a head coaching candidate for BC that everybody was terrified would leave. And it's just like, can you give me one thing about Ohio State's linebackers, both recruiting or their play, that makes you think that he's done a good job?
I mean, they have CJ Hicks and Gay Powers coming in, but I think those are two kids who would come to Ohio State if you or I were the linebacker.
Oh, you mean the two Ohio kids? Okay.
Yeah. Who are, like, by the way, they're awesome. And I think CJ Hicks is going to be a star here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, again, they would come here
if you were the linebacker.
My dog was a linebacker.
Yes. Yeah. I would too. Your dog's pretty cool.
Yeah. Everyone loves Doggo.
Landis's dog is a wiener dog that weighs like 6 pounds, and she tried to jump over a 7 or 8 foot fence when she saw a bird and hit her face on the fence.
Yeah. She does it all
the time. That's a dreamer right there.
That's right.
That's a dog that, you know, that dog can accomplish anything in her own mind.
So we're at 58 minutes and we can go over an hour, but like, do you have a condensed ish thesis on the impact of Marcus Freeman being the head coach at Notre Dame now and what that might mean for Ohio State?
I have two thoughts and they conflict.
Okay.
You know, somebody said to me the other day Mitch said on Stars Matter, he said that I'm a hot take artist. And is that how I am to you?
I think you have hot take artist.
Like, do you think I have a lot of hot takes? Because to me, like,
yeah,
I feel like
you fly off the cuff a lot. Yeah.
I feel like hot takes are just bullshit spewed against the wall with no reason and are irrational. And I feel like the things that I think and say are rational.
I think sometimes hot take artists say things they don't actually mean. I don't think you do that.
No, I believe everything I'm saying. So that's why I'm making fun of myself right now, because I have two feelings about what happened at Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman. One, I find it completely odd that Notre Dame passed over Marcus Freeman's old boss, who happens to have a Group of Five team going to the playoff right now in a top 30 class that I mentioned, a Group of Five program.
Yep.
And I understand that timing and, you know, circumstance might have a part of this. You can't wait till January to hire Fickell. You might need to make a move right now. But at the same time, so I find that odd. At the same time, though, I completely and utterly admire Notre Dame taking a swing for it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, on one hand, I think it's weird. But on the other hand, it's just like, yeah, that's awesome. You know? And I don't know which one I feel like it's going to be good. And it's just like, I don't know. Everybody talks about how great Marcus Freeman has been as a recruiter. And I understand that Notre Dame has probably seen some uptick on the defensive side of the ball, but Notre Dame's class this year is fine. It's not an Alabama class. It ranks in the top five because of quantity, not quality. They only have two top 100
2023 players. Looks pretty good, though, doesn't
it? Yeah. But, again, it's December 2nd, and the class hasn't signed yet. So that to me, it's just like, if you think that Marcus Freeman is going to be the player's coach that understands Notre Dame, who people and players are going to want to play for, is a great defensive mind and is going to recruit his ass off, then it makes sense in theory. I say hire the coach that's going to get you top five classes. I will say that I am a little bit wary of the idea that Notre Dame is going to start signing Bama-like classes. I think the entire reason why Brian Kelly left is because he couldn't do that. And he was tired of getting his ass kicked on the major stage over things that he couldn't control, like academic standards and location. I think he wanted to go just have a team of dogs that were gonna top 100 players all across the board.
Right. I think that's right. I think there is a...
It's like you could make the case, Bill, that like going into the SEC is going to be a much harder path to the championship than Notre Dame, obviously.
Well, let me ask you this there, because this impacts – Marcus Freeman's going to recruit his ass off in Ohio, which I think impacts Ohio State a little bit. But
as opposed to now?
Yeah, I think it's different.
It's not like CJ Hicks is going to Notre Dame.
Like, no, that's what, that's to me, like, the result that I would be looking
for.
Brent, if I'm hiring.
They got Brennan Vernon.
Yeah.
They got a really good shot at getting Luke Montgomery. Ohio State got Sonny Styles. I'm sure Marcus will try to flip Sonny Styles. I don't think he will, but I'm sure he'll try. What we talk about, like, recruiting ceiling sometimes, how close is Notre Dame to its right now?
Pretty close, I think. Top 10 classes. Here's the thing. If you have the number 7 class, the number 10 class, or the number 5 class, you know, there's some subjectivity between those. Breaking through Notre Dame ceiling means being in the top 4.
Yeah.
I don't know if Notre Dame can do that. I don't know if they physically can get enough kids into college at their standard to do that.
I think that's fair. I think I'd probably agree with that. And then my second question would be this. In terms of where you think Notre Dame is and going as it pertains to being a threat to Ohio State, like what kind of threat level do you think that is? If you want to put a number on it or whatever. Like,
Notre Dame was probably a level 3 threat level before, because Notre Dame has hurt Ohio State and Ohio more than any other team. In
three America. Out of what? 5? 10?
Three out of 10.
Okay.
If it happens every 3 years, like it's a minor inconvenience. I think Notre Dame might now be like a 4.
I think I'd be like a smidge higher on that. Like a 5, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, like the thing
they
about
had really good battles. They had really good battles.
Do you think that him being on Notre Dame's staff as a defensive coordinator and him being the head coach changed things? Or do you think if, as long as he's on the staff? You see what I'm saying? Like, if he becomes the face of the program, does Notre Dame become more dangerous using him as that superpower than they would be if he was just on the staff?
For now, yes. If he's, I think there's like an immediate bump in that way.
Because he was already there. It's not like they went out and got somebody. Like,
but now it's
already,
his program, and yeah. Like, I don't even know. Like, I'll make an assumption about Brian Kelly. I don't think kids were going there for Brian Kelly. In fact, I think maybe some kids didn't go there because of Brian Kelly.
You can say it. He's an asshole and everybody thinks it.
Yeah. Not enough people were talking about the fact that Notre Dame's head coach is no longer an asshole. And like, I think that could be to Notre Dame's benefit. If Marcus Freeman is like a cool young dude, good football coach, great relationship builder, who like cares about getting to know the players on his team. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he'll be in way over his head and that'll prove itself over time. But I think for now, I think there's going to be an immediate bump. And like, if he's ready for this and he's a good football coach, I think his recruiting chops are not to be dismissed.
Are important, but I also think that there are circumstances about Notre Dame that it doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah.
That you can't change. It's just like Brian Hartline is a great recruiter. There are circumstances about his situation that aid in his greatness. So, like, as much as we individualize our ratings of a person or a coach based on how we view them as a recruiter, I think we would be dumb to ignore the circumstance. And the circumstance didn't change. So it might be cooler. It might be more interesting. Notre Dame might get 2 or 3 more kids a class that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise. But, like, they didn't just change their academic standards. Mm-hmm. They didn't change their geography. You know what I mean? They were already signing top 10 classes. So, like, if you think that he's going to make them top 5, then great. I just doubt that that's going to happen.
I think it's fair skepticism. I would be... And listen, Notre Dame took a really big risk in doing this. But I'm almost kind of glad they did. I think more programs should do that.
Take a swing.
If you think you have the guy. Ohio State did it with Ryan Day. Oklahoma did it with Lincoln Riley. Hasn't worked everywhere. Didn't work for Oregon when it did it with Mark Helfrich. But I respect the decision Notre Dame made. I'm interested to see where it goes. And I think highly enough of Marcus Freeman that if Notre Dame was right about him, that there is an elevation that can happen there. Starting on the recruiting front.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what this means for Luke Fickell.
Well, I think it means that he just waits for Ohio State now, right?
Is that a thing?
What do you mean?
He's going to stay at Cincinnati for 12 years?
Well, 12 years, I don't know. I mean, I think he's more likely to be there for the long term because of their move to the Big 12 and the looming expansion of the playoff.
Do you think that Luke Fickell would be an attractive candidate for Ohio State if Ryan Day took the Bears job?
Yes.
Like, do you think that that would be like the automatic link that they would make?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen, right? Because their Ohio State fans are afraid of that right now.
No, I don't think so. I think he'll have interest and has had interest. I don't think he'll go. He just doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would go out like that, go out losing to Michigan. And maybe that's like a stupid thing to say, but I think that does factor in.
So do you think if they would have beaten Michigan, you'd say maybe?
I think if Ohio State had beaten Michigan, gotten to the playoff, and like won a national title, and the NFL came calling the Ryan Day, I think it'd be more of a decision in his head, or more of a conversation in his head, and I think possibly he would go. I don't think now is when he makes that leap. If he's the coach we all think he is, then the NFL isn't going to go away. They're going to come after him every year. And I don't think he wants to leave.
Well, I just think the Justin Fields connection is interesting.
I was trying to think, like, is there any precedent for that? Where it's, like, actually worked? Bring in the draft the quarterback highly.
Not that I can remember.
Draft the quarterback highly and then bring in his college coach to help him.
They would have hired Dabo in Jacksonville.
Yeah. I'm sure that wouldn't have gone over real well. Dabo shtick with a bunch of millionaires. I think that, yeah, that's a great decision. So I don't know. I think the NFL is on Ryan Day's horizon as long as he continues ascending in the college ranks. But I don't think this is the offseason where he goes. So I wouldn't fret too much about that.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at on that. But, you know, I don't know. Chicago Bears offer him $13 million. Who knows? I have no idea. He's going to get a pay bump. I know that because Brian Kelly is making $1 billion a year and, Lincoln Riley is making $10 million a year. So Ryan Day, who's due like 7.6, I think, this season, off the contract extension he signed last year, is probably going to get another one and probably going to get a pay raise. So thanks. Shout out to LSU and Oklahoma for getting everybody paid. Because they really did, man. Mel Tucker's making $10 million a year thanks to LSU. James Franklin is making whatever the hell he's making thanks to LSU.
It's off the rails a little.
Those programs got everyone the bag, not even just their own head coaches.
It's off the rails.
And Ryan Day's going to get one too. So a lot of stuff happening, a lot of moving parts this offseason. Signing day is less than 2 weeks away from today. We'll talk more about that in the lead up to it. We'll obviously stay on top of staff changes as well and what that all means. And I think to just kind of talk about where Ohio State's going as a program, and I don't mean that to sound doom and gloom. I think Ohio State is still a very good program.
Is Ryan Day the long-term answer at Ohio State? We'll catch you next week on...
Ohio State's still good. Ohio State's still good. I'll
They're not that good.
Ohio State is still good.
They're fine right now.
Ohio State should be better, but they're still good. Don't have a meltdown because they lost to Michigan, or don't have a full on meltdown. Just have a mini meltdown.
Please just continue to listen to our podcast.
Just a tiny one.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you guys next week.